From Colorado Public Radio, I'm Ryan Warner, and this is Colorado Matters. There's a massive ballot fight gearing up in Colorado. At the heart of it are three initiatives that would cut taxes and slash state fees. Backers say they'd shrink what they feel is bloated government. Opponents say these measures could bankrupt the state, counties, and cities. But that's not the only hot ballot topic voters may wrestle with come November. There are also efforts to outlaw abortion, to keep Colorado from following some of the federal health care reforms, and to change the bail bond system for accused criminals. Colorado Public Radio's Megan Verlee starts us off with a look at those three initiatives that will be the biggest fight this year.
I'll be honest with you. This story is almost 7 minutes long, and that is really long in radio time. But it's not long enough to explain everything Amendments 60, 61, and Proposition 101 do. So here are some highlights. They cut income and property taxes. They slash telecommunications and motor vehicle registration fees. They do away with many of the financing tools currently used by state and local governments. Those fighting them say these measures would fundamentally change Colorado, and not for the better. Just listen to Governor Bill Ritter in his State of the State address.
If these measures pass, the state could never again support building another public school, library, or recreation center.
Or Alan Dreer, an elected official in Highlands Ranch.
Do not pass these things. Otherwise, we may be a third world state.
Or Tom Clark with the Denver Metro Chamber of Commerce.
Our biggest concern is that this will result in what we refer to as a voter-initiated recession.
It's typical government, overblown scare tactics.
That's Natalie Menton with CO Tax Reforms, a group backing all three measures. She says they don't do anything more than force officials to cut waste, something she thinks they haven't done enough of, despite the recession.
I believe that the government thinks that they never have enough money. And what we simply are asking is, yes, come back to the voters and ask us.
Menton doesn't think people will see any change in the services they get from government. But her group's website does not offer any detailed fiscal analysis of what the changes would mean for the state's general fund or for local governments. The nonpartisan Legislative Council staff, which is government-funded, estimates all the cuts could eventually cost the state $2 billion a year. That's almost a quarter of Colorado's current general fund. Menton, though, doesn't agree with those numbers. She points out many of the cuts would be phased in over several years.
For instance, the income tax. The 0.1 decrease only happens if there is a 6% increase in income tax revenue. So that's not even a cut. That's just a slower rate of increase. So they are assuming certain things that I don't believe may necessarily come true.
Amendment 60 and Proposition 101 cut where governments get their money. Amendment 61 puts new controls on how they spend it. It outlaws many financing practices state and local governments currently rely on. Among the biggest changes, local governments and authorities could no longer sell 30-year bonds to pay for new infrastructure. Instead, they'd be limited to 10-year terms. Menton says the shorter payback time would save taxpayers millions of dollars in interest over the years.
For instance, in our own family, what we did is we scrimped and saved, and we paid off our mortgage about 10 years early. And we ended up saving nearly $60,000. We prioritized, and I'd like to see the government do the same thing.
Opponents also use the mortgage metaphor, pointing out that few governments, like few families, can afford the higher monthly payments that come with shorter terms. Menton and I talked in her family's auto repair shop near the Jefferson County Fairgrounds. Just down the hill is one massive example of the type of project that would be affected by Amendment 61. In this Lakewood neighborhood, workers are constructing the west line of the Fast Tracks light rail expansion. Voters did approve the overall financing for the project, but current law allows the Regional Transportation District to issue specific bonds when they want to take advantage of interest rates. RTD spokesman Scott Reed says Amendment 61 could make it difficult to finance the full Fast Tracks expansion.
Especially the later projects that have not yet received funding that we need to work with the Federal Transit Administration, the stakeholders, and a lot of other agencies to try to secure the funding that we need.
Concerns like this are fueling a massive effort to fight the three initiatives. Organizers say the coalition is similar in both size and bipartisan support to the one that backed Referendum C. That was the Tabor timeout 5 years ago.
So what are some of the messages that are working? Well, the message that your child may be in a school classroom with 49 other students is playing well. People don't want
to. Ann Terry with the Special Districts Association speaks to a packed room of local officials in the city of Trinidad. Mayors, volunteer firefighters, and school board members are learning what to tell their constituents and their friends and neighbors about the initiative's impact. After the meeting, the Colorado Municipal League's Mark Radke says public education is key.
It's a giant civics lesson since the people have decided to exercise direct democracy in this case. Then we have to go out and explain, like we would to elected officials, just how things operate and why they operate that way.
To get that word out, opponents have already raised more than $4 million, mostly from trade groups, public employees unions, and chambers of commerce. That can look a little lopsided, given that backers only have about $12,000 in the bank. The disparity doesn't reassure Trinidad City Manager Jim Soltis, though. He worries the initiatives sell themselves.
It's not going to be really easy. Because if I wave a $20 bill in front of you and say, you can keep this, if you don't question it as to what's going to happen if I take it, yeah, it's not going to be real easy.
Soltis plans to ask his city staff to draw up a shadow budget this year. Voters will get to see what the city's finances would look like with the three initiatives in place. But a budget showing a smaller city government would only make Rob McNeely happy. The Libertarian congressional candidate believes claims the measure would shut down government or deepen the recession are overblown.
If government officials were doing their job, these wouldn't be happening. And since government officials are not looking out for the best interest of their constituents, this is what people are having to resort to, and that's why I support this.
McNeely was leaving a public meeting on the initiatives in Douglas County last week. Patricia Walker came out of that same meeting saying she needs to know more about the measures before deciding her vote.
I found an awful lot of validity in the con, but I also want to research and see more from the pro side to see why I might consider saying yes. So I will do more research.
Even voters without Walker's interest are going to be hearing a lot about these issues. That's because with a multi-million dollar ad campaign opposing Amendments 60, 61, and Proposition 101 about to launch, and polls showing voters worried about government spending and taxes, this is shaping up to be the biggest ballot issue fight in years. Megan Verlee, Colorado Public Radio News.
Well, we asked Megan to stick around and explain some of the other issues that may be on November's ballot. Megan, nice to have you.
Great to be here.
And let's start with the personhood amendment. This actually has come up in Colorado before and is back on the ballot. Is it different from when it came up, 2 years ago?
Yeah, it came up in 2008, and there are exactly two words different in this year's version. It says that you have the full rights of a person, a legal person, starting at, quote, the biological beginnings of life. It used to be fertilization, now it's biological beginnings. Effectively, it would mean that abortion would be illegal, emergency contraception would be illegal, the destruction of embryos created during in vitro fertilization would be outlawed, and a lot of cloning practices, which I think still sound like science fiction to a lot of us, but some folks are worried about those.
Okay, and the idea is that a person starts at the point, when an egg has been fertilized, I guess.
Exactly.
Okay. And does this have a different base of support this time? Same faces that are supporting it or what?
It's changed a bit. When this issue came up in 2008, and we should remember it was defeated then about 3-1 by voters, this was the first time this tactic had been used by anti-abortion groups to try and outlaw abortion. And there was some division. It didn't get a lot of backing from the Republican candidates that year. It was sort of outside the mainstream of that movement. Well, in the last 2 years, the folks who've been advocating this position feel they've really brought themselves to the mainstream of the anti-abortion movement to not just restrict, but to actually outlaw abortion entirely.
Sometimes ballot measures on these really divisive subjects are meant to drive turnout as a way to, say, appeal to Republicans to come out on Election Day. Do you think that's what's going on here in any form?
I think it's actually kind of the reverse this year, that the conservative movement is so sure that their voters will come out strongly this year. It's a midterm election. You've got a Democratic majority in Washington that the opposition is really fired up about. They're thinking they'll benefit from that wave and from 2 years of kind of putting this idea out in front of people. And that's where they're hoping to reverse the loss they suffered last time.
Give us a picture of the opponents to this.
Well, the groups that you would expect, Planned Parenthood has been very active in opposing it, and the American Civil Liberties Union, both those groups have filed suits in other states against efforts like this.
Now, Megan, the deadline to submit signatures for ballot initiatives was last week, right?
Mm-hmm.
Are there any pending approval at this point?
There are actually two. One of them, let's start with Amendment 63, or what will be Amendment 63 if the signatures are certified, and they have until the end of the month to rule on that. This is being pushed by the Independence Institute, which is run by John Caldera, and it focuses on the Obama administration's health care reform. Basically, if it passed, it would say that Colorado could not in any way enforce the individual mandate. So
this is that you have to have health insurance.
Exactly. It's a lot like what just passed in Missouri in a special election a little while ago. And it works kind of in two ways. It's actually kind of interesting. If Obama's health care reform goes forward in the form it is now, basically the state could not help the federal government force you to buy health insurance, which would put the state constitution in a showdown with the federal government over who exactly controls that power.
Because this would be put into the state constitution.
Exactly. But there's another kind of what-if scenario here, and it's what if the lawsuit that's been launched by some attorneys general,
including our own,
exactly, succeeds. And in that case, backers are foreseeing a scenario where the federal government might say, okay, well, we don't have the power to tell people they have to buy health insurance, but we can put a lot of carrots in front of states or a lot of sticks behind them to make them do it for us. So it's kind of like federal highway funds are tied to, you know, what your drinking age limit is and whether you have seatbelt laws. Well, the federal government could use some of its funding to try and force states to enact this. Well, it would be in our Constitution that Colorado could not follow that direction.
And the other pending initiative.
This is one that is backed by a group called Safe Streets Colorado. It's in large part supported by the bail bond industry. And it's a little complex. Basically, if you get brought up on charges in front of a judge, the judge can decide if you're going to be bonded out. So you would go to a bail bondsman and give them money and they would front your bail. Or the judge can direct you into pretrial services, which is a government-run program where they would set the conditions of your release. Well, the bail bond industry feels that pretrial services has been taking too many cases that they're not suited for. And so what this initiative would do would say that only first-time nonviolent misdemeanor offenders could go into the pretrial services system. Everybody else, if they were not going to be staying in jail, would have to go through the bail bonding system.
I imagine that would help the industry's bottom line.
Quite likely. They also, though, point out there are places like Philadelphia, which outlawed bail bonding several decades ago, where the government system has run into a lot of trouble. So I think this will be, if it gets on the ballot, will be an interesting one to watch.
So those are initiatives, which is to say that it's through citizen signatures that they're on the ballot. There's also the process of referred measures where the legislature says, hey, here are some things we want to address. Let's put it on the ballot. What's in that category come November?
Well, three things, and they're kind of small and technical, basically.
Okay.
And they are moving regulation of gambling enterprises from the Secretary of State's office to the Department of Revenue. Just felt like lawmakers feel it's a better fit there.
Okay, a little tidying up there.
Exactly. A measure that would allow lawmakers to move the state capital out of Denver should some disaster strike the city, kind of an Independence Day action movie scenario. And then the third would exempt from county property taxes government land or property that people lease that is worth less than $6,000. And that basically, if you're, say, a cattle rancher, you've got federal land leases. Well, the county can tax you on that.
Land that you don't own, but that you are using, say, to graze cattle.
Exactly. And this comes up for ranchers. It comes up for ski areas. There are a lot of people who use public lands in Colorado. Well, the backers of this say, if the taxable amount isn't a lot, you've got counties that are spending a lot of overhead money to collect pennies in these taxes. And so this would basically tell the counties, it's okay. You don't even have to send out tax notices if the value is less than $6,000.
Megan, thanks for helping us navigate this.
Great to be here.
Colorado Public Radio's Megan Verlee talked to us about some of the issues that may be on the November ballot.